Good evening, and we are back here with Saving Lives. We've had a couple weeks off, but now we're back full throttle. And I just love that song. We have Art over there with the controls.
Hello.
And then I have two special guests with me today. I have Aiden and Andrew. So, Aiden, why don't you introduce yourself first?
I'm Aiden. I'm an addict.
Hi, Aiden.
Hey, Aiden. I'm Andrew, I'm an addict.
Hey, Andrew. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
I've asked them a couple times to come up here, and with the scheduling conflict, it's just always been a little bit of a struggle.
Well, when you show up outside of their work, and you know they have no choice but to get in your car.
Exactly.
And she just didn't tell you that that's what she's been doing?
Yeah. Pretty much been,
it's
like, stalking them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But it's great. You know that they're both here. They're a huge part of my recovery.
Awesome.
And I like to think of them as, like, I don't know, not like recovery gurus, but like kind of, you know?
I'll take that.
Hey,
it's
not a bad thing in today's world.
Exactly. So let's start with Andrew. Do you want to give a little bit about what you're doing now? You know, we'd like to talk about more on the recovery end here, but you can share a little bit about what you do now.
Maybe a little bit of kind of like my story.
Yeah.
How I got here. Yeah, absolutely. Been a long journey, that's for sure. My story includes a lot of relapses, you know, and that's just for me. So I guess a little bit about what brought me here, right? I had a fairly normal upbringing in a suburban neighborhood outside of Philadelphia and, you know, just started realizing problems in life, you know, at a young age, and found ways to cope with them, you know, throughout middle school and high school. And, you know, people have asked me over time, they say, a lot of my friends actually who aren't in the rooms have said, like, do you regret any of the decisions that you made? And quite honestly, like, I don't, because my decisions have brought me to where I am today in a room with my two good friends in recovery,
mm-hmm.
you know, on some new age radio station, which I think is sexy as hell for recovery.
Yep, absolutely.
And a business owner, which is pretty cool, right? Just continuing to do the next best thing every day.
We're the mm-hmm. only 24-hour, 365 recovery
and
radio
some.
Station around.
That's right? Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's truly beautiful. And how
I'm
about you, Aiden?
It's going to get me into Warp Tour.
I know. And Aiden, what you know, brings you to being able to show up here on a recovery radio show?
Absolutely. It's kind of similar to Andrew. Had a very much normal upbringing, school, sports, that kind of thing, suburban life. And, you know, same kind of thing. Found drugs at a pretty early age. Had addict tendencies before I had discovered drugs, and was on the road to drugs before I even knew what they were. So eventually found my way there, and my life really took a U-turn away from all those kind of goals that I had set for myself. College, sports, all of those things led me to some pretty awful places. And at the end of the road, I was, you know, had nowhere else to go but treatment. And since I've found recovery, have not found a reason to leave. And it's been 891 days. And,
that's
nice.
So amazing.
Here we are.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
I wish we had the little fart button now that we talked about. Just to, like, add that in there. Like, dude.
That would have been great.
Yeah. I can help you.
Oh, we can get the sound effects going.
That's great.
Oh,
we're talking about
us three
it.
Would
we're
be
here.
Really bad with that. Don't put that in front of us.
Don't even show.
Yeah. Well, you got three Aryans here tonight.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sky's the limit. But that is incredible. And Aiden, like, you're in grad school right now. You know, you are practicing.
Heading to grad school,
well,
but yeah, absolutely.
Close enough. I like to, like, reach a little further. Like, so
yeah,
you're
definitely.
Going to be in grad school.
Yeah, definitely. And I was actually talking with someone about this the other night, just about how addicts are so geared toward instant gratification in everything that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still very much true of my life now. But the whole process of, you know, high school, college, grad school, and then working is like the longest process of delayed gratification ever. And it's so counter to everything that I'm comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's the same kind of principles that I apply to recovery, I've applied here. And if I figured that, you know, my whole teenage and young adult life was geared toward drugs, I can probably reconfigure myself to approach school and, you know, life and work in the same way that I approach
mm-hmm.
recovery.
And, and live that quote-unquote normal life that a lot of people talk about. Because I'm like, I don't know how people actually could like do their daily like living without some form of recovery. I mean, I don't know. But if anybody has any insight and wants to call in, our number is 609-241-7103. And I'm getting a little bit better with delivering that phone number, which is great.
As they're plastered everywhere. Well,
that is why.
What?
Oh,
that's
perfect. Oh, we got the sound effects now. That's this is great. This awesome. Is going to go in a weird yeah. direction.
It's going to be great.
But, I also think it's worth noting, though, that Aiden is also studying to be a lawyer, a practicing attorney, which I really do think it's especially in New Jersey with the stuff that I've read and everything that's going on in Washington, and especially Christie and their opiate approach here mm-hmm. in New Jersey specifically. And I think that a lot of what he needs to tailor some stuff to is the hope here, right? Yeah. And it's
funny you should say that, because do you know who I'm meeting with tomorrow morning in our office?
Are you seriously?
Really? Mm-hmm. That's wow. spectacular.
Yeah.
And I truly think, I think it's a wonderful thing what they're doing. But whenever someone asks me about the approach there, I say, instead of focusing on all the negatives, because there's a ton of negatives associated mm-hmm. with recovery, right? There's still this stigma. Focus on the hope, right? Like, tell people about the basic text. Mm-hmm. Tell people about recovering addicts who have 891 days clean and who are studying to be an attorney.
If you go to Reach New Jersey, and actually starting to do that part right now, but people are getting fed up with hearing that. I mean, they need to have like several different commercials to play, not the same one over and right. over again. So that's what I'm going to tell him tomorrow. You know what I mean? When yeah. I meet him. But they also have, if you scroll to the bottom of reachnj.gov, there's videos. And Kevin, our founder for City of Angels, and his wife, who, you know, they lost their son, which is, you know, how this all came about,
mm-hmm.
Did their video telling their story. And whenever we go out and do speaking engagements, which is several times a week, and even when we, like Tuesday, we're going to do high school kids in Ocean County.
Oh, that's 170 great.
70 of them. We show them that movie because it's giving you that parent's perspective of losing a child. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But not sitting there and not doing anything about it. I mean, they really tried to make a difference in where it goes. But that's absolutely right. And I think that's part of why he's coming to our office tomorrow.
To hear the
because
hope.
Because we're going to have parents, we're going to have recovery addicts, we're going to have a lot of different people there, you know mm-hmm. what I mean, that could give him a perspective.
Yeah, that's spectacular. I think that's an approach that absolutely has to be taken, because you hear about all the negatives and you want to hear about the, yes, there's a loss, but then there's also hope here too.
Absolutely.
Right?
And that's why what we come for. I agreed to do this in the first place too, was because there's so many people that's swept under the rug, and, you know, every time you turn on the TV or the news, you know, you hear about this epidemic and someone dying. Well, there are so many people that are afraid to just be like, hey, look, I struggled, but I came out of it and I'm in recovery. And, you know, with you guys being here too, it just shows that like there are people out there that are willing to share the hope. Hey, like, been there, done that, did some crazy stuff, lived through it. And now I live a life beyond my wildest dreams.
Yeah, I was just going to say the life beyond the wildest dreams aspect. And I think, you know, you and I both very much share that, because life beyond my wildest dreams for me for a long time was a minimal existence, to say the least. And mm-hmm. anything I have now is, you know, just a result of this program, and really is a life beyond the wildest dreams. So anything that happens tomorrow was not planned on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, not by any means. The life that I'm living now is, I couldn't have guessed it.
Flying by the seat of my pants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 5 years ago, not a chance I would have been able to say that this is where I thought I would be.
Did you even
starting
want to
with
live?
Starting with alive, right?
Right.
Yeah, great point. Starting with the fact that I didn't think I would even be here today.
Right. That's awesome.
Yes.
I couldn't love it. Find it. Thank God.
I love it. That was perfect.
Don't put those in front of me, though. The show will get weird.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's great. And, like, even to, like, where you guys are at, like, you know, there's some years of recovery in this room right now. And I remember, like.
Which is crazy just to even
yeah,
say.
I know. I'm, like, thinking. I'm, like, wow.
You would have never guessed this. How long have you both been in recovery?
So we were talking about this on the way out. So, strange thing about Aiden and I is we're actually the same person. Our birthdays are days apart. Our clean dates are days apart. We look alike, as I'm sure you can all hear over the radio. So yeah, it
well,
is
no, they can
watch
see
it on YouTube.
They can
tomorrow.
See it.
Oh, that's
yeah.
very true.
Yes. They can this see it on YouTube. Yeah.
But yeah, so we're both coming up on 30 months here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
brother from another mother.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. So 3 years ago, you would have never pictured yourself sitting here talking about recovery.
Not a chance.
Right. No.
I wasn't even really into taking showers. So, you know, being dressed in somewhere else is nice.
I have two daughters who, you know, one who's going through rehab right now and one who's about 18 months clean now, I guess.
Oh, that's good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. So. And the fact that, like, you know, your other daughter was able to make it to rehab, you know, because, the stuff out there, like, you know, they keep saying it, you know, that's the epidemic, blah, blah, blah. And, but it's like, it's not just heroin. It is like the fentanyl and carfentanil and God knows what else. It is, people are dropping like flies. And, you know, there's a buddy of ours that just isn't getting it right now. And, you know, he's back in treatment. Thank God he's back in treatment.
And it's so hard. I'd imagine for you being in recovery to go like, why can't you get it? You know what I mean? Like, look at us. Mm-hmm. You could be part of this. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think half of me says that, right? Because the half of me still lives in sometimes in my old self where I'm like, come on, just come join us, please. It's beautiful on this side. And then the other half of me identifies with it, right? Where I remember that struggle. I don't forget that struggle for a day that goes by. I remember what it's like to be in the grip.
And that's what my daughter said, the same thing. You know, my oldest, and you know, the first one that went through it, she said, you know, I don't ever want to go through that again. It was so hard to detox and get rehab and get my, you know, I mean, it literally took well over a year for her, you know what I mean, to come back and see her as the old person that she was. I called her Reagan from The Exorcist when she was in her 30s. Because that wasn't my daughter. You know what I mean? That was somebody I didn't know. But it's great to see people come back, you know what I mean, and with a new zest for life and enjoying all the things that, you know, you could just, like, it's almost like I have a nine-month-old granddaughter, and to watch her suck everything in, you know, watching somebody in recovery for a while, it's like the same thing. It's like you're being born again, and you're just taking in everything.
You see that, like, twinkle in their eyes, and the light come back in their face, and sometimes it's hard to see it in yourself, like, you know, I've noticed it in other people before I could actually see it myself. And I know for a long time, like, I couldn't look in the mirror. And then there's some days where I'm like, damn, I look good. It's like, it's like the whole just crazy, just growing into like this new way of life. Like, you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world. And as far as with the meeting tomorrow, is it stuff that's going on with, are they trying to come up with a bill or?
Actually, you know, he's kind of been doing his tour.
Right.
You know, he started out. I mean, he goes and visits treatment facilities and talks to the staff and the clinicians and the executive directors. Right. And
the fact that he does that and cares enough about it is tremendous.
What he's doing is truly, I give him a lot of credit. This is, in my opinion, with everything that's going on in the administration, the hardest thing to talk about is the epidemic, right? It's what's really killing everyone right now. It's not just killing individuals, right? This is a disease that affects everybody. It destroys the people around them.
It destroys their family.
Mm-hmm. It really does.
It doesn't have to. You know what I mean? And that's where, you know, with City of Angels we come in too. You know, when your loved one is off getting help, you need to be going to help. You need to be going to get a meeting. You need to educate yourself and learn not to enable and all those things. I went through that. I mean, you need to educate yourself if you're not already educated. You know what I mean? And there's so many resources available today. You know what I mean? To learn more about it. I mean, those police stations and governments and counties and, you know what I mean? I mean, the federal government. Everybody is trying to battle this disease. And and it takes a village, right?
It really does. And I think it's interesting because Philadelphia is not too far from here, right? But the approaches are different. Philadelphia, you have encampments down in North Philly right now. And the whole debate is the railroad owns the spot where all the using is taking place on the tracks, right, down in North Philly. And the whole argument is the railroad needs to pay to clean this up. And if they pay to clean this up and they build these fences, people aren't going to come back. But that's not the approach. The approach needs to be the face of the location, right, the Christies of the world, to come out and say, look at this hope here, right? Look at this literature. Look at this big book. Look at this basic text. Like, there are stories here of people who've gone to those encampments and come out the other side. This isn't about building a fence. It's about taking them down and really facing it head on. And I really appreciate that. And there's a huge difference between the approaches here. And that's why I do give it a lot of credit, because not many places are taking that approach, saying, let's get to the forefront of this, right? Stop playing defense.
You know,
start playing offense.
We're still getting people, though. I mean, we're making strides. I mean, you know, 9 years ago, we couldn't get a letter to the editor of the newspaper. Mm-hmm. I mean, now we're getting specials and news stories and government officials. I mean, I would have never told you 3 years ago Governor Christie was going to be sitting in our little rinky-dink, you know what I mean, old decommissioned school. you know, that's a recovery center, you know, in Hamilton. You know, mm-hmm. it's about 15 minutes from here. But that's going to happen tomorrow.
That's
spectacular.
I mean?
And hopefully, you know, we have a wide range of people we invited to sit at that table so that he can hear a lot of different perspectives from not just the treatment centers. Now he's going to hear from the parents. You know what I mean? And even when we talk to parents, it's like, hey, I'm not a professional. I'm a dad. You know what I mean? I got to, like, tell you what I know. You know what I mean? And you can take it for what
and
it's worth.
I wonder, too, has he heard from actual addicts?
Well, you
that
hear
are
all
that
the,
are
yeah oh yeah
absolutely
because I'm like maybe we should show
you
up.
Can hear the commercials on the radio yeah, right now. As a matter of fact, the one thing I want to ask him tomorrow is why the hell don't I have these commercials?
Right.
I mean, we're a recovery radio station. I'll play them.
Absolutely, and I think that's what I was aiming towards too. Because you see the commercials, right, of the families being ripped apart and the people struggling and like trying to go to a rehab.
Awful
and
music.
All this sad music. It's like watching a puppy commercial. One of those ASPCA commercials. It's hard to get through.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah, you were almost 3 years, you know what I mean, into your recovery now. When you were coming in off the street to seek treatment, did you have insurance or did you have to go through the Medicaid route?
I'll let you start with that one.
I had insurance.
Did you have the...
So, interesting story here.
dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, so I'd gone to a few treatment centers in my time. I did have insurance, but the last time I'd gotten clean, and I think this is a big... aspect of recovery, right, for me, and I always talk about it, is sponsorship. And I truly believe I had the best sponsor in the world. Mm-hmm. His name was Bobby. He was a saint. I mean, he was unbelievable. He helped to write the basic text for NA. I mean, he truly was an idol in our area.
Mm-hmm.
And he had sponsored me throughout all of my treatment visits, all of my relapses. He knew my parents. I mean, I was very close with this man. And he got diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And one day he had looked at me very late in his diagnosis. And, you know, he looked at me and said, I can't keep dealing with you and your family like this. I want you to be here with me and like help me through this. And that for me was enough to go back to my house, lock myself in a room, detox myself, really fight through it. And you know, by the end of that, he got to see me with 10 months clean. I was personally helping him with administering his medications, right? And I was a part of his family. And like his family, his wife, his kids, like saw me holding these liquid morphine bottles and fentanyl and injecting him with Dilaudid, and trusted me knowing that I'm just there helping him, right? I'm just doing what it is that was what he wanted when he had that conversation with me. And I'm working a good program, so I'm capable of being there for someone else. So my last go at it didn't involve a treatment center at all. And I do think that that's an important point to talk on because, you know, it's something that's there to help people, but it doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't have to be that way. There's multiple paths to recovery.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, there's people that have taken Suboxone for a decade, you know what I mean? Or methadone, or you know what I mean? Whatever other medically assisted treatment you want to look at.
But. I know in, I don't know if it's in Jersey, but I know in PA, with how many people are dying, they're actually putting a lot of people on the Suboxone maintenance for like 6 months.
You know what? And that's fine. I'm talking decades. You know what I mean?
Oh, well,
you
yeah,
can't
of course.
Put somebody on that. I mean, I know people that have been on it for 10 years, 8 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think you it's like using methadone. You're not really overcoming your problem. You're just replacing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? With something else. Now, if that's what you have to do, that's what you have to do. But you're right. There's multiple pathways to treatment. My daughter went to treatments the last time she detoxed herself. I mean, she went to some meetings, you know, I think most people prefer the AA meetings over the NA meetings, you know what I mean, myself, especially if they're in recovery. I don't know, maybe they're more honest.
Well, it truly is how it's approached in rehab, to be honest with you. When you go in, it's mostly AA focused, and they'll bring in some H&I commitments for NA, and then you kind of get to really get your feel as to which program you identify with the most, but they all have the same end goal, right?
Right. Right.
And with that being said, you never really know who's listening. So if there is someone who's been on methadone for a long time, I would highly advise seeking treatment because there are some things that coming off of have some serious, you know, health concerns with it. With long-term use of methadone, it's in your bone marrow at that point.
With the long-term use of anything, even with Suboxone, my daughter told me that detoxing off the Suboxone was harder than detoxing off the heroin.
I've heard that. Well, and another thing to kind of your point about treatment pushing different forms of recovery, I know that I've done an H&I commitment at my alma mater, if you will, treatment facility. We were one of the few NA groups that came through. So it was really important for me to bring that back. And I know that my treatment facility was one of the few that really had a steady NA, kind of pushed people steadily towards NA. But again, it really does come down to it. And treatment doesn't always work the same for everybody. I know that when I went through it, you know, the level of surrender is not always there for everybody. And I know when I went through it, I wasn't ready to get totally honest when I went to treatment and was afraid that my family would find out the extent of my use. So during my intake, you know, just totally made up a ridiculous story about the actual patterns of my usage and just went to an outpatient treatment facility because I was afraid that if I were to get honest, that my family would find out about it. So my level of surrender was certainly not there, but it ended up working out just the same. I had a fantastic counselor.
But it's scary going into that. I mean, you're like walking into the unknown. Yeah. You're already a little bit unstable because, you know, you've been using for however long you've been using it. So you're not trusting anybody. You know, usually you go off by yourself, right?
I was 19 when I went in, and so I really wasn't, and I had not been living with my family for a long time, and I was just very much used to fending for myself to some extent. So wasn't used to being honest or really trusting anybody. But again, it ended up working out. And I just, you know, to Andrew's point, not everybody goes through treatment. I detoxed myself.
Right. My daughter did as well. I mean, she's 18 months, you know what I mean, in recovery right now. But she did treatment. So she knew how to do it. I mean, she knew what she needed to do.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And even, I think you said it right at the beginning of your show, you know, relapse. Guess what? It's part of recovery. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, hopefully you don't, but if you do, you know, you fall off the horse, you get back on.
You come right back. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that.
You have the exposure. You know what your next step
What's
is.
Wrong is not recognizing that you fell off the horse. you know what I mean? And going right back at it again, rather than going, damn, I messed up. You know, this is what I got to do to get back on track again. Mm-hmm.
And you know what the beautiful thing about recovery is too, is that you have a support group, right? So if you fall off track, and sometimes it's hard for people to admit that to themselves, right? Like, oh, I know what I need to do. I need to get back into the rooms. I need to get back into a treatment. Sometimes it's really hard to hold yourself accountable to it, right? You're back in the grip. But when you create that exposure and you go into a meeting and you make friends like Bernadette and Aiden, if I were to stop showing up, I'd be getting calls like, yo, can we help you, right? What can we do here? And just kind of expedite that process of like making sure that, you know, I'm one of those lucky few who get that seat in a rehab again, essentially, right? Because not many people get that luxury.
And that's so much a part of it, the network. I can honestly say I wouldn't be here without the network. And I still, you know, sponsorship, that kind of thing is absolutely important. But I rely on these guys as much as anybody to hold me accountable for my behavior. Because even with almost 30 months clean, I still need Andrew and Bernadette to keep me in check. Andrew and I were just having this conversation the other day that so often I'm still ignorant to my patterns of behavior. And whether it's by choice or not, it's irrelevant. But I do need people to point that out to me and really support network.
I'm just
and
perfect.
Meetings.
So now you're right. You're right.
But support network and meetings to me have been more important than my actual treatment. So like going and meeting a support network within treatment.
I totally believe that because my grandmother had all kinds of sayings and I'd be like, yeah. You know, as you get older, you're going, damn, grandma was pretty wise.
Appreciate that.
She had a lot of little sayings. You go with somebody who limps, by the end of the year, you limp. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. And it turns to be true. I'm a firm believer at 61 years old that you are your environment. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So if you're around good, you're good. You know what I mean? If you're around bad, you're going to be bad. I mean, we have mob mentality, right, when we're out doing things.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And they say stick with the winners, too.
Yeah. You know what? And it's hard when you're young and you meet somebody. You know, we're young, we're foolish. You know, we have our aspirations. A lot of testosterone if you're a guy. you know what I mean? And you know, you go off and try and live your life. And it's easy to get steered in the wrong direction sometimes. Mm-hmm. I have been there and done that. I mean, I'm not perfect in any way. I was a child of the 60s. I can tell you stories, but I will not.
We'll save that for another day.
I wish I had that in front of me. I'd click the fart button. Yeah.
That would have been perfect.
Oh, man. I wasn't even paying attention.
Yeah. I was like, wait, is he going to get it right now? Yeah. Yep. Oh my god, that's fucking great.
That's amazing.
I think.
You know what? I think I need one of those at my office. So when my employees do something out of line, I could just click one of those buttons.
That is perfect. We should bring it to our home group at the business meeting.
That would be great. Oh. That would make things go much more smoothly.
That'll make Andrew come back to hang out with us.
I think one thing you were talking about that I was interested in going back to earlier was talking about kind of the way the disease of addiction affects families in general. And just talking about kind of the havoc that it wreaks on those families and everybody involved in the recovering addict or not recovering addict's life. The other side of that is kind of the principles of recovery that come to become a part of that family's life, even if just one person is recovering. So I know that for my family, at least, and for other people I'm around, that I try to, we talk about practicing the principles in all of our affairs. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And I know that that plays a role in my home life and, you know, work or organizations with school. I try to kind of imbue those groups with the same principles that I practice in recovery. So kind of another, the hope for those families that have been hurt by the disease of addiction, all that damage that's been done, is that those principles can come into play in other ways. And I know that my mom will even make references to recovery or, you know, that doesn't sound very spiritual of you sometimes.
Have you been hitting your meetings lately?
Yeah, exactly. And so the hope kind of there is that we can carry what we learn in recovery over to the kind of the family in general. And
the family, like I said, when your loved one is off getting, you know what I mean, their help and, you know, their guidance to get started in their recovery, you know, this isn't your time to go on vacation. I mean, this is your time to educate yourself. You know, go to Naranon meetings. These are going to help you understand the disease of addiction. One of the other things we offer is recovery coach classes. I mean, we haven't done one here in a while. We really need to do one. But those classes are good because you get a mixture of recovering addicts, parents, clinicians, somebody whose friend was just involved. But when you get all those people in a room for 30 hours for a week,
right?
They kind of start to understand each other. Like a parent can understand, you know what I mean, where that recovering addict was when they were making their decisions. Mm-hmm. So I just think it really helps.
It's huge.
You know what I mean?
We have this annual meeting at our meeting, and it is Naranon and NA like together. And you have a speaker from, you know, the parent side or the loved one side. Mm-hmm. And then you have the addict speaker, or the one that's, you know, in recovery. And it's so amazing to have them together. And, you know, Andrew said that, you know, his sponsor that passed away from cancer, his mom actually started the Naranon in our area. And it's been going on for how many years now?
34.
34
wow.
years.
That's awesome, man.
And I believe his daughter started a meeting for children whose parents are in recovery.
Right.
Yep. She did.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all kinds of groups out there with support. You just need to take advantage of it and go look for it. I mean, you can go search for this stuff on Google. It's going to pop right up.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to get up and go.
Yeah, the resources are endless.
Yeah. You know? So if you want to call in, whether you're an addict or you know someone who's an addict or any kind of other disease of addiction, I should say, it could be anything. Give us a call at 609-241-7103.
The phone lines tonight.
The crickets.
That's perfect. Oh my goodness, I love that. I'm going to get that for my phone.
I'm doing it. After this, I'm doing this. I'm going to use this with my employees. I think it'll be motivating.
Mm-hmm. We'll be driving home and hitting random buttons.
You know, and one of the luxuries about recovery as well is and kind of relating back to, you know, never being able to say that I thought I'd be where I am today, is that, you know, I'm able to, like, even today I employ people who are in recovery.
Yeah, you're like a business owner. Like, who would have ever thought that you would be a business owner?
That,
I mean,
also,
come on.
Yeah,
you couldn't get a day.
No, there was a lot of wedding key tags.
But this is why it's awesome to have him here speaking.
It is. I was so excited.
Yep. 30 months ago, I did not know
nothing,
what I wanted to do.
He had no direction. He didn't know what he was going to do. And now he employs other people.
Yep.
And he's a productive member of society.
And being able to
and other
watch
addicts.
What a concept.
I know. It really is. And I was able to see them grow in this. And, you know, I only have a few more months, but it truly is like being able to see how they were and like how they are now. And it's like remarkable. You know, like business owner, going to be a lawyer. So if I ever get in trouble, they'd be like, help me out. But like, who would have thought? Like, it truly is incredible.
That was definitely directionless 30 months ago. Not in school. Had really no aspirations. But, you know, and what Andrew was talking about, being able to employ people in recovery, again, talking about how kind of we can apply those principles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, I deal with those on a daily basis, right? Like honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. I have to approach every situation with my employees, particularly the ones that are in recovery, with a recovery mindset, right? Because I know how I would take some criticism as an addict.
Right.
So I have to be careful with that on a daily basis. I'm fortunate enough to be in a position where I have to reset myself constantly throughout the day to make sure that what I'm saying can, one, be understood, right? And two, you know, treat them with how I get treated from a Bobby, from a Bernadette, from an Aiden, mm-hmm. right? And I truly approach it with that. And I think it makes for like a really good environment. Like I'm thrilled to wake up every day and go do something like that and be able to have those conversations. If I need a reset button, and living in Philadelphia, sometimes my employees and I will just call it for a few hours. We'll walk down to Rittenhouse Square and we'll go make a day meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's awesome.
Like who else gets to do that? Mm-hmm. You know,
it should be like a part of everybody's job.
I do.
That's yeah. true. He does.
But yeah, well, you've retired.
Life's good.
Yeah, it truly is.
Life is good. One day mm-hmm. we'll be there. One day,
definitely.
Yeah, but your skills for empathy or ability to be empathetic really go through the roof, and it's so counter to what you practice in when you're using, which is you really have to turn off that empathy switch if you want to continue to do what you do and continue to use at all costs, live to use, use to live. And now...
Yeah. You know what the most interesting thing has been, though? And this is something I've noticed over the last few months. I have two very different sets of employees. I have the employees who are... You know,
not
recovering
addicts.
And then I have the opposite side of the spectrum, right? The coders, the data scientists, the Ivy League grads, and watching them learn about each other, watching this interaction, because everyone's very open about who they are. Everyone knows who's in recovery. Everyone knows who's not. And watching the people who've never been exposed to recovery. They've never been exposed to people who have the mindsets like we have, the addictive tendencies, which you can bring into a work environment, right? And watching them interact with one another has been one of the most interesting things to see. We have some of the most wild conversations during the day. And you know what the beauty of it is that we work on it. We work in very like interesting spaces. It's kind of hard to explain, but one of my recovering employees, you know, came up with this idea to one of the data scientists saying, hey, we do all this data analytics stuff, right? We predict patient outcomes. Let's start predicting patient outcomes for who's going to suffer from an overdose, right? And be able to go to the health insurers in this space and say, you need to focus on these patients. Based on their trends, there's an overdose coming here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an easy thing to build, but it's interesting because you have the recovering addicts, right, who don't have the data science background. They're not going to go build these algorithms. But they can come up with that idea. Whereas the kids who are coming from the Ivy League school who majored in this, they're not coming up with the idea to predict an overdose.
Right.
Right? Because they're not exposed to it. But the ones who are exposed to it know that it's a serious problem.
Do you have any stigma that goes from the non-group to the recovering group? You know, like...
Within my workplace?
Yeah.
No, everyone's been very open about it.
That's because he's, awesome. the boss.
You know what?
I lay down the law.
Even though we've made great strides, you know what I mean? There's still people that don't believe that this is a disease.
I know, and that really pisses me off.
They
I
believe
see
it's
Facebook.
A choice. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, yeah, I woke up, I wanted to be an alcoholic today. Mm. Really? Like, you know, I woke up, I wanted to be a heroin addict today.
Have
Who
you been seeing
that?
The posts lately that there's like some kind of article going around that this person's like still says like, oh, you know, it's not a disease. Is that there? I'm
some
like
moral deficiency.
Yes. Some like literally, I want to like jump through the screen and like I can't even like let it entertain my mind anymore because I get so angry.
You know what? There's two kinds of addicts, and when we pull somebody in off the street, it's are you a partier or are you, you know, masking your pain from something?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because they're different.
Right.
I think it's easier for somebody who's just a party. You're doing it because you like the party
mm-hmm.
is a little bit easier than you're masking some type of a pain. You know what I mean? With your use.
Yeah.
They're two separate things.
They absolutely are. And you know what? To answer that question, one of the most interesting conversations I saw was when someone who's not affiliated with recovery was having a conversation with one of my employees who is in recovery. And it was very brief, but he was curious about it, right? He wanted to know more about it because he kind of had that same mindset, right? Which was, is this really a disease? Like, tell me, like, I'm really curious about this. Tell me more. I want to know. And very simply, my employee who's in recovery looked at him as he's holding this glass of water. And he says, imagine the most thirsty you've ever been in your life. All you needed was that glass of water. And then imagine someone looking at you and telling you, don't drink that. Like, your mind, that mindset that it puts you in of just no, like, you're just gonna, what are you gonna do? You're just gonna shrug it off and say, nope, I'm drinking it. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care what your thoughts are on it. I'm drinking it. That's addiction, right? It's you not being able to control yourself. And he was like, that's the most simple I can possibly lay it out to you. But, and it was amazing to see.
85 million American have addictive behaviors. And I believe that number is much higher, much higher.
Very much so.
Absolutely.
And I think as human beings, we have addictive personalities. I mean, half the planet walks around not looking around. They're looking down at their phone. Mm-hmm. And that cracks me up. No matter where I am, people are just do-do-do-do. I mean, they don't even look up, mm-hmm. you know? That's the kind of world we live in today.
Yep.
People are just blind to what's going on. You know what I mean? So their phones, the internet, Facebook. I mean, we're probably one of the most least productive nations on the planet. You know what I mean? Because everybody's on Facebook posting their shit and selfies at work. And you know what I mean? This is what I had for lunch. And you know, I don't get any of that, but...
Right. Yeah, I don't really do that.
But it's addictive behavior nonetheless. It's just not harmful addictive behavior. You know?
Right.
The same thing. People have their TV shows. I'm addicted to, not me, but I'm saying people are addicted to, I got to watch, like my wife, she's got to watch her shows at 9, 7, mm-hmm. whatever.
Andrew's addicted to SoulCycle.
I am definitely addicted to SoulCycle.
Aiden's addicted
nothing.
To you know, Snickers.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I mean, I like flawless. The internet. I'm addicted to the internet. You know what I mean? Because I, even though I've been on it for a long time, I'm 30 something years. I'm still amazed that I can bring the world into my living room. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? With a few keystrokes.
Right.
I think what we were talking about earlier, kind of about the two groups of employees at Andrew's work, I think that kind of interaction holds so true for the outside world, and it makes it easier when you have people that are both professionals, doing professional stuff, interacting, and I think so much of the stigma is the junkie. And so when you come into contact with somebody like, let's say, Andrew or myself, that don't look like we just walked off the street. Don't look like we were homeless.
Minus the tattoos. Full sleeve of tattoos.
Maybe the minor hit, unfortunately.
But minus
did you notice that he didn't right. say my name? So I already looked like...
But, you know, but minus that, you're absolutely right. No one would know. I mean, you know, when we get someone, you know, new right in off the street or fresh, you know what I mean, from their addiction and they're just starting their treatment, they don't look healthy. You know what I mean?
Right. And so
but to see them come back, like to look at you guys and go like, wow, I mean, you could just look at you and go, look how healthy they are. You know what I mean?
He's healthier.
They're like, thanks.
The one thing Ada can admit.
But once you seek recovery, that's all becomes part of it, right? I mean, right. It's not just your mind. I mean, it, you know, you start to respect your body again mm-hmm. and get yourself in shape and you eat correctly. And, you know, all those things make differences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to a certain extent, they're healthy too, right? Like we were talking about in the very beginning, a lot of people come into recovery and they don't know what they want to do, right? I didn't think I was going to be waking up every day and doing what I do, but I've turned it into a healthy addiction. Do I overwork myself a lot? Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
And then I have both of them
we
say
can speak
yes right
for
off the
him.
Bat.
No, that's what we do, right? When you're passionate about what you do, you probably don't even look at it at work, which is why.
No,
you
know why? It's
into.
Great because I feel like I'm helping people on a mm-hmm. daily basis, not just in my work environment, but actually like what we do, going out there and trying to like save patients. Lives. And it's something that I've somewhat turned into an addiction, right? But I have people like Aiden
healthier.
And Bernadette to kind of, you know, guide me
it's
through
not
that.
Something that's going to helping people isn't going to kill you.
Right.
Yeah. I'll help people all day. I'm fine with that.
Absolutely.
If that's my mission.
And you know what? And it makes you feel good about yourself. Like at the end of the day, you got something done. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And you helped somebody else, even if it's that one person. I mean, you know, I don't get paid for what I do, but I love it.
And
you know
we
what
just
I mean?
Can never forget too that, like, our recovery is what gets us these opportunities and
exactly.
it gives us this platter of things like school and owning your own business. And I own my own business. Like we can't not go to meetings and
it's
we can't not surround ourselves with people
to enter recovery.
Exactly.
And you're mm-hmm. never too young. You're never too old.
Right.
Is it hard?
It's awesome.
Hell yes. Is it worth it? Oh yeah.
The hardest thing sometimes I think for me is like it gets tedious after a while.
Recovery?
like going to like the same meetings all the time.
Yeah, we have this conversation all the time.
You don't get complacent, right? But it's hard not to.
Yeah,
to
Andrew was giving me shit last week about my complacency. I was like, all right, fine, I'll go. I'll see you there.
But that's the beauty of it. You have the people to call you out on and say, hey, listen, we're all getting a little bit complacent. We're making the same meetings. Let's switch this up a little bit. Yeah. And the next thing you know, you're making new meetings and you're like, whoa.
And you feel like amazing.
It's a whole new recovery. You start like over. You hit that reset button.
Absolutely. Going to treatment facilities, doing H&I stuff. We were just talking about our friend. Going to treatment facilities like that kind of keeps things very fresh. Mm-hmm. And like just what I was talking about earlier, as far as I find that it's easier for me to carry the message and me to kind of tone down what, unfortunately, have to tone down what recovery looks like to somebody. Because again, I don't necessarily look like I just walked off the street. I have some semblance of an adult life. Same for Andrew. So it's easier for me to kind of carry the message now than I could before. I don't remember how I got on this, but, and it's easier. And so it's kind of, it's interesting to kind of like keep things fresh for myself and to like introduce people to this, because I can assure you that even 2 years ago, nobody really wanted to know what my perspective on recovery was, because they still weren't sure if I was going to make it. And you know, can't ever take anything for granted or get complacent, but it's definitely a lot easier for me now to kind of talk openly about recovery than I could have before.
Yeah. And you know what, once you spend some time here, you realize that those reservations that you may have had or those fears that you may have had are not as big as you made them out to be.
You know, the hardest thing to do is to walk into that first meeting.
It really is.
You know what? But do it if you need it. You don't have to say nothing. When they come to you, you can just go, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
you know, and truly, I mean, I think people go in with that pressure that, oh, I'm going to have to talk and introduce me. You don't have to say no. You're visiting.
Just open your ears a little bit. Yeah. Just listen. But it is interesting, though. You see a lot of people, they come in and they're like, oh, my God, my life's done. Right? Like, I'm never going to be able to do these things again. But that is so far from the truth. You see people come in, they're like, I'll never be able to go to concerts again. I've been to like 50 concerts all clean. Aiden and I went to 2 back-to-back Red Hot Chili Peppers shows together, and it was one of the best things that I've ever done. Mm-hmm. I've been to Super Bowls clean. I've gone on business dinners clean. I've gone on business trips clean.
Traveled
I've gone
all
on vacations
place.
With my fiance clean. I mean, anything is possible here. And sometimes it's hard to see in the beginning, but then you find people with a little bit of time. You could say,
I say we try to take
us.
This show to Warped Tour.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, you could go to Warped Tour clean.
In our future.
Yeah, absolutely.
I tell my sister all the time, doing drugs was probably one of the best choices I've ever made. Mm-hmm. At the time, absolutely not, but just the connections you make and then the further freedom that it's allowed me in life. You know, even if I wasn't an addict, I feel like my horizons have definitely been broadened as a result of coming into recovery.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, even my business partner, who Aiden's met, his name's Casey. He's probably one of the most brilliant people I've ever met in my life. It makes absolutely zero sense to me. I gave him my basic text one night. He read the basic text in a night. Just so we're all clear on this, okay? I've never done that. I'm sure you two have never done that. He read the entire thing, and he came back to me the next morning and was just like, I think everybody needs this in their life, right? And it's just true, right? It's so yeah, true. To a certain extent, I'm grateful too.
And it's the same thing with the recovery coach classes. Even though we apply it to addiction, you can apply it to anything in life.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? To help make yourself successful. And I think that's what a lot of people, you know, slowly start to realize is even if you're going to AA and NA or any of those meetings,
right.
that your aha moment comes at some point in time. You know?
Mm-hmm. I don't even remember that happening. I'm sure it happened somewhere along the way.
I remember you sharing about,
remember.
Like, he's like, I think the pink cloud's fading.
Me?
Yeah.
I don't even remember.
It was a while ago.
The pink cloud.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably been a couple of those.
It's a nice little ride. And you know what? The one thing Bobby always told me, and you always hear it too, which he was like, make sure you got your pink parachute. And, you know, most of the time I didn't, right? Yeah. And that's why I collected countless white key tags. But then there comes a time where you find yourself back on that cloud and you're like, I'm going to broaden my base here, right? I'm going to build a support group. I'm going to make meetings. I'm going to call people and I'm going to have that parachute when that cloud goes away.
And here we are too. And like Bobby was big on the broader the base, the higher the freedom. Like I think he was one of the first people that actually explained it in a way I understood it. Like,
our symbol.
Oh, yeah. Like, and who would have thought like I never got it. I didn't understand it, but like I finally did. It's like,
yeah.
I'm like, what are you going to push right now? I'm like, waiting for.
Thank you for playing. Next contestant.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to start taking an iPad from him.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I definitely don't. The Pink Cloud, I think there's definitely been a couple. Because I was thinking about this actually on the way to see you earlier, Bernadette. Just the cyclical nature of recovery, and it's such that it's an ebb and flow process, and I don't know that there's ever been a peak, and then it's just plateaued from there. I would say there's absolutely all sorts of up and downs. Mm-hmm. And the hope is that there's always another kind of peak around the corner. But right. I've definitely had more than one pink cloud moment, more than one aha moment, mm-hmm. and a number of downward moments too. But the hope is you stay clean and, you know, there's more around the corner.
Yeah, and you don't get clean and immediately have a pink cloud. I mean, when I got clean, my sponsor was dying. So my pink cloud came after essentially his death. And me realizing, like, whoa, I got clean for somebody, right? But I'm staying clean today for myself. Mm-hmm. And then that's kind of like when my pink cloud started a little bit, and
sure,
rode that for all I could.
Yeah, there's tons of perspective shifts, I think, throughout recovery. And I think I've, even at tough moments, I think I've stayed clean for people other than myself. At the end of the day, it's for me. But there's been times when it's tough, when it's just easier to be like staying clean for my family, mm-hmm. or whomever.
But yeah. When you're not doing it for yourself is where you have, you know what I mean? The more chances for relapse.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's usually when I'm not doing well. Yeah. Is that it?
But I mean, when you're doing it for you and you make that decision, I think that means more. I mean, I smoked cigarettes for 43 years. That was a hard addiction to quit, man.
That's why he has mints over there.
But I did.
I'm not there yet. You know, I'll get there.
And like anything, it's mind over matter. I can't sit here and go, God, I wish I had a cigarette. I wish I had a cigarette. I wish I had a cigarette, because you're going to end up having a cigarette. You know what I mean? You can't sit there and go, wow, I wish I had a line. I wish I had this. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're going to end up going to watch what you wish for, right?
Yeah. You know, and I think this is one of the most important things about recovery. It's okay to have the thought, right? Mm-hmm. It's normal for us as addicts to have the thought. We're drug addicts, right? We're just recovering drug addicts. So those thoughts are going to come. You're always going to think about that line, that hit, that prick, whatever it is.
Scary.
Whatever your addiction is, you're always going to think of it. It's not your fault for having the thought, but it's your fault for continuing to entertain it and not take the steps that you're taught, which is call somebody, make that meeting, share about it.
I tried to quit smoking for a long, long time. I mean, to the point that when I finally got to the point where I was going through the motions, like I didn't even enjoy it, you know what I mean, anymore. It was easy to just throw them down. There was no weaning. There was no mints. There was no...
Oh, I need the mints.
There was no gum. There was no... I mean, you know, I was putting the nicotine patches on and smoking. I mean...
Done that.
I think everyone has.
I think we've done that.
Yeah.
So it's mind over matter. You know what I mean? Even as simple as a thing as you would think quitting cigarettes would be, is a struggling addiction to try and quit. Nevertheless, you know, a harmful opioid of some sort, whether it be heroin or, you know, an OxyContin
took. You become chemically dependent on that, because you feel, coming off that, the way your body feels and how sick, and like literally you feel like you're dying. You literally, exactly.
Yeah, use the buzzer on her now.
Yeah.
Darn it.
I think if there's ever a time to use that on the radio, it's when you're talking about how sick you get when you don't realize how deep you're into it. Yeah.
Right. Yep. It's awful. And like, for me, I can't forget that last day. And I can't forget what brought me into, thankfully, recovery, because I know I would not be alive right now.
You know what? Thinking back on that now, though, is probably helpful to you, because you're like,
I don't want to go back.
Yep. No, exactly. I shared about this not too long ago. I do not remember what my last high was. Same. I just don't, because my life became so boring and so meaningless, and I was living in this animalistic level in my head in real life, right? I don't remember that. But what I do remember is I remember my first day detoxing, mm-hmm. and I remember my second, and I remember it all the way up until day 26, still crawling in my skin, right? Not wanting to go back to that, sweating and chills, and I don't lose sight of that for a second.
I have my daughter's boyfriend who's in Oregon still, which is where I was out there, you know, mm-hmm. when we did our last show. I know people, you know, all over the country, so I was able to, you know, at least offer him somebody who could help him there.
Right.
But he's detoxing himself, and he's like, hey, Dad, I'm on day 9, and I feel great today. And I'm just saying to myself, like, tomorrow you're probably going to feel like you got hit with a freaking sledgehammer. Sure. You know what I mean? But I'm not going to burst your bubble.
Yeah. Right.
And he absolutely was.
Even in recovery for years, there's days where I feel like I was hit by a bus.
Yep.
And there's days I don't want to get out of bed.
I was like, you've been using opioids for damn near 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really think that it's all going to go away in 9 days or 10 days or 14 days? I mean, it takes time, you know, for your body to shed itself of all. It
takes more than that, too. You can be clean for a year and a half, and all of a sudden you'll get post-acute withdrawal, thing you know, you feel sick again, and that's why you got to have that support group. That's why you got to be there so you can call people and say, yo, you know, as we heard the other night in a meeting on Monday, you know, you spent all these years walking in the forest, you're not going to walk out in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good one.
You know, that's a great way to look at it. That's, you could just take one thing away from a meeting like that, and you realize, like, it's not that simple. It does take time.
The hardest thing for someone to do is to dial 10 digits.
609-241-7103. Is that
10? Well, that'd be nice.
Mm-hmm.
No, instead we get crickets.
Yeah. That's all right. At least they can re-listen.
Call in and talk to us. 609-241-7103. Mm-hmm. Let us know you're there.
Like what Andrew was talking about earlier, I was actually thinking the same exact thing, that I don't remember what the last day of my using was like. But I do remember going through treatment. I do remember the first meeting and just how outside of my skin, how uncomfortable I felt because I was no longer using drugs and I wasn't used to from like 12, 13 on, wasn't used to anything like that. And I remember I lost $60 at my first meeting, fell out of my pocket. And I was like, those dirty junkies took my money. I'm never going back. This is ridiculous.
That's where that $60 came from.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I don't remember it, but I do try to keep in mind how uncomfortable I felt and just how different I feel in my own skin now. And like you were talking about your daughter, seeing how the person that she is now, like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, how she is now. And that's how I feel now, kind of like who you are when you're a little kid, happy, joyous, and free. Right. And I just try to remember how terribly uncomfortable I was for a long time. Right. That keeps it fresh.
But you know, you guys coming in and talking tonight, hopefully it's going to give somebody hope that, you know what I mean? There's hope going through recovery. It's not easy. It's probably one of the hardest things you'll ever go through, but it's life-changing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is positively life-changing.
And no doubt that it's definitely going to help someone. And even if someone's not, you know, actively wanting to call in, but I know it's helped me in general too, because like these are people that are in my recovery network that like call me out on my stuff when I might not be feeling well or having a good day, you know, because sometimes it's hard to want to get vulnerable and like be on a radio and like on, you know, a camera and like just be raw. And, you know, they kept me just as much as accountable as I kept them. You know, it's great.
And that's what you need to do. You know what I mean? Everybody needs somebody to help keep them accountable because we are weak-minded persons, human beings that walk this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And we should be there to help each other.
Right.
You know what? And it doesn't even have to be people in the program too. You know, it's just, it's as you said earlier, it's the people you surround yourself with. You know, you surround yourself with good people and you're going to get good things.
Yep. And it's a positive experience, right?
It is. And I remember I was on a business trip in Florida. And my business partner could tell I was really in my head. And he drove me to a meeting. I didn't even know where we were going. And he just pulled up and he said, enjoy the hour and I'll see you when I'm done, when you're done. And you know what? It's just a little thing like that that just goes, this goes well beyond recovery and the people in recovery. It's truly something that I'm excited for you about tomorrow too, because it's people like Christy who are going to be able to get this message out there and say, this goes well beyond the people who are just walking into those rooms.
Right.
And I really like that he's taken the time to actually educate himself more about the whole recovery process. I mean, you know, he's talking to people that are in recovery. He's talking to the clinicians.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking to the mom and pop, you know what I mean, parent organizations that are, you know, there to offer help. I mean, Philadelphia, you got Angels in Motion, you know, they're walking the streets in Kensington, heard handing out sandwiches and coats
and hitting people God with bless
those hitting people Pop-Tarts.
Whatever it is. But you know what? Nobody's turning them down. You know what I mean? And that's what's wrong today. People put their head down and walk past you rather than, you know what I mean? Here, let me get you something. I tell a lot of parents because they feel like they're enabling. Oh, They called me and they said they're hungry. Great. Have a pizza delivered to the corner that they're on. You know what I mean? Just don't give them the money.
Exactly. You know I was going to say, that's not enabling.
But I feel bad because, you know, they don't have any place to live. Buy him a hotel room and go here, you know, go to this hotel, tell the guy who you are, and they'll hand you a key.
Right.
that's not enabling. That's helping your loved one, you know what I mean, get through. If you feel that guilty about them being on the street or being not having a meal or not having a coat, then you can fix that. It's not enabling to help somebody.
Right.
It's enabling to hand them cash when you know what they're going to go do with that money. Mm-hmm. It's like handing that guy standing, you know, on the corner of Route 1 when you get off of Route 1 in Trenton with the sign, hey, you know, I need whiskey. You know what he's going to go do with the money. I mean, he's telling you in his sign what he's going
to
go do.
Yeah, to a certain extent, though. I think there are exceptions to that as well. I remember I was driving back from work one day right by 30th Street Station, and there was the same individual that I'd seen for, I guess, 4 weeks at the time. And he would always walk past my car. And I never gave him anything. And then one day I rolled down my window, and I go to give him $5. I know exactly where the money's going, right? I already know that. And he looks into the car, and he's like, Andrew? And I realized it was a kid I knew from high school for years. And I had driven by this kid. This goes to show you what addiction can do to you, because I did not recognize the kid for the life of me until I actually looked into his eyes. And I looked at him, and I gave him the $5, and I did say, I know exactly where this is going, but I hope that this last use is going to be what gets you back, right? Because I had just seen you at a meeting, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, and now he's clean and in Florida. And it's something like that where it's like, yes, okay, it is enabling to a certain extent, but you can attach some hope to that and say.
I don't see that as enabling. I see that as a decent human being offering someone some hope. And you know what I mean? There's nothing bad about that. I mean, maybe that would be his aha moment. People say, how come you continue and continue, you know, and you get a kid and he's in a treatment 30 times? Because maybe 31 will be his aha moment. You know, we're not going to give up on you. We don't give up on you.
No, not at all.
I was just in Chicago and I was walking out of my hotel to go to a meeting. This was not 2 weeks ago, like 10 days ago. And walked outside my hotel and a gentleman that was homeless asked me for a cigarette. I offered him a cigarette and he asked if I had any money. I said, no, I'm actually, and he looked a little worse for wear. And I said, I'm actually on my way to a meeting. And he asked what kind. So I told him it was an NA meeting and he said, oh, okay. Where's it at? I probably should hit one sometime this week. So I didn't have a meeting list on me, but wow. I showed him my phone. I was like, here's, you know, here are the days that the meetings are here. You might not want to come tonight. He was a little roughed up, but you know, I do think there's some level of, like I was talking about earlier, that I think we're able to carry a level of empathy that you don't often see every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people are carrying it in different ways too. You know, I'm going to something pretty interesting tomorrow. I'd been doing some research on, you know, I'm really into artwork and photography, and I was telling Aiden about this, and I'd found this one artist in Philadelphia. He's not an addict, but he spent 5 years doing a project of just driving down to Kensington, interviewing addicts on the street, and taking like a very still portrait of them, which takes like a long time to process, right? You have to get them to stand there and be still for minutes upon minutes, which for an addict is hard in that setting,
sure,
and actually get to know them. So I ended up going and seeing that. I emailed him and I said, you know, your work speaks to me, right? Because I see myself in their eyes, of these people that you took the pictures of. And I, you know, I was fortunate enough for him to say, you know, come take a look at my studio. And I did, and I ended up getting a few portraits from him. But
seriously, it's amazing.
And I'm going to this gallery tomorrow of his opening of a book of all these pictures of addicts and their audio interviews and what they wrote in his journal. And this is a guy who's not affiliated with recovery at all. He's not even an addict. He just did this as a project when he was in Drexel like 15 years ago. And you know, it's not even us that's bringing the message anymore. And I said, why do you want to do this? Right? Like, no one does this. You will not find me when I was using, I would not be on the street finding someone who's like, hey, can I talk to you for 5 minutes? Like, people are going out of their way to say, I want to give these people a voice.
Mm-hmm.
Let's end this stigma and let's give this person that normally people would turn their head away from and just walk past them and say, I want to hear your story.
Right.
Tell me why you're here. How can I help? Right? Mm-hmm. Because maybe taking your picture is what can help you today, knowing that someone cares and wants to talk to you and hear you for you.
Right. See, that is incredible. And yeah, he does have beautiful work. But we are out of time, so I want to say one of my little...
Good night, everybody!
I want to say one of my little sayings before we go. So it's, never let go of hope. One day you will see that it has finally come together. What you have always wished for has finally come to be. You will look back and laugh at what has passed, and you'll ask yourself, how did I get through all that? So I'm Bernadette, and I want to thank Aiden and Andrew for being here.
Thank you.
And Art for doing all the mechanical work.
Yes, thanks for coming, guys.
And that's awesome. It. We're out. See you next week.
a distant light.